Iran rejects claims about granting the International Atomic Energy Agency access to individuals as part of its inspections of the country's nuclear program. Israeli forces clash with protesters holding a fresh rally in Tel Aviv to protest the policies of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And China announces a rise in its annual military budget amid growing tensions between Beijing and Washington over a wide range of issues.
Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us.
Our top story, Iran has rejected claims about granting the International Atomic Energy Agency access to individuals as part of its inspections of the country's nuclear program. The spokesman for the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says the issue was not even raised during the visit by the IAEA chief Rafael Grossi to Tehran. Behruz Kamalvandi added that there was also no discussion about unrestricted access to the alleged three undeclared locations where the agency claims to have found uranium traces. He also stressed that Iran's agreement with the IAEA during Grossi's visit complies with a law passed by the Iranian parliament to counter sanctions and develop the country's nuclear program. As part of the agreement, Iran said it will voluntarily allow the agency to conduct more verification and monitoring activities in case such activities are needed. After arriving in Vienna, Grossi claimed that the agreement includes access to people of interest.
The stalemate between Tehran and the three remaining signatories to the Iran deal over reviving the 2015 landmark agreement has once again brought the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, to the Iranian capital. Rafael Grossi held talks with a number of Iranian officials, including President Ebrahim Raisi, Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian, and head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami. During a joint press conference with Iran nuclear chief, Grossi said his meetings in Iran took place in an atmosphere of cooperation.
The atmosphere is an atmosphere of work, of honesty and cooperation, and I think this is it is the most important thing. Our dialogue will continue today.
The IAEA chief also expressed hope that his meetings with Iranian officials would produce good results.
We are working hard. What I can tell you is that our teams, we have been working. Now we are taking recess to come and talk to you. But we are working hard in order to have good solutions today.
He also hailed his meetings with Iranian authorities as constructive.
By having a constructive discussion like we are having now and having good agreements like I am sure we are going to have, we are going to be paving the way for important agreements, and this is my hope.
Iran atomic chief also addressed the reporters. Islami said the Islamic Republic has no reservation about advancing its nuclear program, adding that the country will not give up on its national interests. Regarding claims about uranium enrichment, Islami said the IAEA's report has confirmed Iran has not enriched uranium beyond its declared 60%. He added the issue has now been resolved between the two sides. Islami underlined that the meetings show Tehran and the IAEA maintain professional relationship.
The visit by the head of the IAEA comes as the UN agency is accused of bias when it comes to Iran's nuclear program. Tehran is critical of the agency's political approach and says the UN watchdog is under the influence of Israel, which is not even a party to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
The recent visit by the IAEA chief to Iran comes as many throughout the world have raised doubts over the impartiality of the UN agency. This comes to the spotlight, especially when the UN nuclear watchdog has always failed to address questions about the agency's inspection of Israeli nuclear sites. During his press conference, Grossi argued that Israel is not a party to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, or NPT, and therefore the agency cannot technically inspect Israeli sites. Given that, one would argue that the IAEA, along with the international community, have failed to pressure the Israeli regime to become a member of the agreement. After all, the regime in Tel Aviv possesses more than 400 nuclear warheads, which can by default be an enormous threat to the entire world. In the meantime, Iran has been critical of the UN agency for acting politically in cases related to the technical issues of the country's nuclear program. Tehran says the agency acts under the influence of certain countries, but the IAEA claims otherwise. Iran's concern can be clearly felt in President Ebrahim Raisi's remarks when he met with Rafael Grossi on Saturday. President Raisi said Tehran will continue to cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency if the IAEA preserves its independence and defend the rights of the Iranian people. Raisi said Tehran expects the agency's activities not to be under the influence of certain world powers who pursue their personal interests. The president called on the IAEA to express realities about Iran's nuclear program without any partiality and based on professional behavior. This is significantly debatable when one argues that the International Atomic Energy Agency has even failed to condemn terrorist attacks on Iranian nuclear sites as well as those targeting Iranian scientists. This is why the pressure is always coming from entities like Israel that are not even a party to the NPT. The pressure is also coming from countries like the United States that they themselves are in possession of hundreds or maybe thousands of nuclear warheads and a threat to humanity by nature.
People upstaged a sit-in in the Syrian capital, Damascus, calling for an end to the U.S. and Western sanctions on the Arab country. The bans are making life harder for people across the nation, particularly following the recent earthquakes there. Our Syria correspondent Mohammed Ali has more in this report.
Syrian political parties, along with Syria-based Palestinian factions, have gathered in Arnous Square in Damascus, calling on the U.S. and its Western allies to lift economic sanctions on Syria. Speakers said this Western siege on Syria is inhumane and requires urgent actions by the international community, considering that people in Syria are dealing with deteriorating economic conditions following the recent earthquakes.
We express our anger over the unilateral sanctions imposed by the U.S. and its allies. Syrians suffered a lot as a result of such unjust and inhumane actions. Not lifting them is a crime against humanity. We call on the U.N. to shoulder its responsibilities and try to get such sanctions lifted.
We reiterate our support for Syria and reject the unjust seizure act, which led to shortages in basic needs. We call on the U.S. to stop looting Syria's resources and get out of the Arab country. We also call on Arab and Islamic nations to stand beside Syrians dealing with crises. We call on the Arab League to give Syria's seat back to the country.
Participants raised Syrian and Palestinian flags as well as banners asking for an end to the decades-long bans that have deprived them of their basic needs and resulted in a surge of food and medicine prices.
This is an unjust siege. We as Syrians are suffering from this siege in all aspects of our daily lives, starting from transportation, because the bans have caused a lack of fuel as well as shortage in medicine and also high food prices. All that is because of the imperial blockade.
Life changed so much following the sanctions. Prices went high. People are searching for their basic needs. This siege caused a shortage of so many basic commodities. We call on the world to do something and help us.
The recent earthquakes have further worsened the already deteriorating economic and humanitarian situation in Syria. The UN says even before the earthquake tragedy, 70% of the population needed humanitarian assistance due to the war on the country. One challenge after another, Syrians endured so many hardships in the past decade that made living a normal life a daily challenge. U.S. and EU sanctions exacerbated their suffering, and they demand an end to such injustice. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
The weeks-long protests in Israel have once again turned violent. Regime forces used water cannons to disperse the protesters blocking a main highway. Tens of thousands of people hit the streets of Tel Aviv for the ninth Saturday in a row to protest the judicial reforms proposed by the far-right cabinet of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Israeli forces, some on horseback, also blocked some streets in an attempt to contain the demonstrations. The protesters are angry at the new cabinet's plan to curtail the judiciary. If approved, the legislation would increase the cabinet's influence in choosing judges and limit the powers of the Supreme Court to overturn the cabinet's decisions. Over the years, the Israeli regime has put restrictions on Palestinian access to agricultural lands and water resources in the besieged of the Gaza Strip. But despite all these cruel measures, some Palestinian farmers have found unique ways to thrive and overcome the status quo. Ola El-Elsi has more for us in her report.
Farming is a fundamental part of the Palestinian identity and history, deeply rooted in the culture of land and the struggle for freedom. After decades of Israeli occupation, organic farming has weakened significantly. Now, Palestinian farmers are finding new ways to revive the economy and maintain their heritage through innovative, sustainable farming methods. We spoke to Aid Abu Ramadan, who's one of the pioneers of vertical farming.
I'm actually a civil engineer, but I have inherited this passion for agriculture from my father and grandfather. Actually, due to the Israeli occupation and the agricultural land is shrinking every day, so it came to my mind that we need to plant something that gives more per unit of land. So I was thinking of intensive agriculture as well as vertical agriculture.
Abu Ramadan is optimistic about the success of the project. He emphasizes the need of vertical farming as a means for Palestinian farmers to show resistance against Israeli violations.
This model of vertical agriculture is the first model in Palestine. It's an experiment, but it looks really promising. I hope that we will continue with vertical and intensive agriculture in order to help our Palestinian farmers. But first, we need the know-how, we need the technology, we need the knowledge to bring to them, because we know that vertical and intensive agriculture is the future for Palestinian farmers.
Palestinian farming is suffocating under the Israeli occupation, with its two basic resources of land and water legally controlled. The Israeli violations have increased unemployment and poverty rates in Palestine and exacerbated the already dire humanitarian situation.
Israeli violations against the Palestinian agriculture include firing at farmers, leveling agricultural land in the area around the fence, preventing farmers from working in their fields, aerial spraying of herbicides along Gaza's perimeter fence, and dumping of farmers' land in eastern Gaza. The Israeli occupation has placed bans on exports of agricultural goods from the besieged Gaza enclave. The regime imposes impossible conditions on Gazans' farmers with the intention of decreasing the quality of the Palestinian product and reducing their marketability abroad. Furthermore, Israel denies entry of the agricultural equipment and certain fertilizers.
Israeli occupation is not simply limited to harming civilian population, damaging buildings and infrastructure. It's fundamentally aimed to destroy the Palestinian lands and environment in order to put pressure on the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and cut their links with the motherland. Al-Asi, Gaza.
Turning elsewhere now, China's military budget has risen by 7.2% this year, slightly outpacing last year's increase. The national budget released on Sunday showed some $224 billion has been allocated to military spending for the year 2023. Beijing says armed forces should work to carry out military operations, boost combat preparedness, and enhance their military capabilities. This year's hike in defense spending marks the eighth consecutive single-digit increase. The upswing in the defense budget comes amid growing tensions between Beijing and Washington over a wide range of issues, including Taiwan and the South China Sea. Political analyst Angelo Giuliano says China's increase in defense spending is quite rational given the rise in the defense budgets of Japan and the US, both Taiwan's allies.
I think this increase is a non-issue. Just to remind you, the GDP increase for 2023 will be 6%. So now you have, in comparison, you have a 7.2% of increase for defense spending. I think it is marginal. What worries me more is actually what Japan is doing. Japan is aiming to spend double what it is spending right now in defense spending by 2027. That is a much more relevant news, especially since Japan is positioning itself to be extremely aggressive. Japan declared that what Japan did was to reinterpret the Pacific Constitution. Additional to that, they say that if Taiwan was to be attacked, well, Taiwan as an ally would be defended. So I think that is the real news. When it comes to defense spending, I think China is very rational. I think also you need to compare to the U.S. Right now, China is spending one quarter of what the U.S. is spending. If you were to adjust this into power parity, purchase power parity, it would be about half what the U.S. is spending.
Chaotic scenes in Peru as police and anti-government protesters clash in the capital, Lima. Protesters are calling for early elections and the resignation of President Dina Boluarte. They also demand the release of ousted President Pedro Castillo. The rallies began in December after then-President Pedro Castillo was forced out of office and was replaced by his vice president, Dina Boluarte. The demonstrators want Castillo to be freed. He's now in pretrial detention for attempting to close Congress to avoid an impeachment. Dozens of people have been killed during the months-long unrest.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
About yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
writing. Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 5th, 2023. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from around the world, from Pro Tama Prom from Bangladesh. Osman Ramos Reyes from Guatemala has sent us reception report, and Bashir Ahmad from India. So Pro Tama, Osman and Bashir, thank you very much for sending us these reception reports. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And of course, we've received emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read these great emails. Ding Lu from China has sent us an email. From Guatemala, we've received an email from Osman Adrian Ramos. Muhammad Akram from Pakistan has sent us an email. From Italy, we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Dario Gabrielli, and Nectarios Manousos from Greece, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. Please stay with us. We will be back with you. This is Listeners Special, and as I said, we've received an email from China from Ding Lu. So let's see what Ding Lu says. Dear IRIB English Radio, I am a listener from China. My name is Ding Lu. Today I received your English language program signal here in Jiangsu province. The signal is very strong. Here I want to apply for a paper QSL card from IRIB English Radio, if possible. I wish IRIB English Radio staff good health. All the best. I like to collect paper QSL cards of radio stations all over the world. I hope to collect QSL cards of IRIB English Radio too. Thank you. First of all, salam and warm greetings from Iran. Ding Lu from China, appreciations to you for this email. And it's good to hear that you could receive our signals in your region, in Jiangsu province, which you found it very strong. That's good. We also wish you good health and all the best. Please accept our electronic QSL as verification, since sending any material, including paper QSL card, in the time of pandemic is not possible. Anyway, Ding Lu from China, thank you again. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And any view or opinion on behalf of you about IRIB English Radio broadcast is welcomed. Thank you again, Ding Lu from China. And here we've received an email from Guatemala from Osman Adrian Ramos. So let's see what Osman says. Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for your email. I send you greetings from Guatemala, where I can occasionally listen to you when propagation condition allows it. Keep up the good work. Salam, Osman Adrian Ramos from Guatemala, and warm greetings to you from Tehran. Osman Adrian Ramos from Guatemala, thank you very much for this email. We are so pleased to hear that our signals are received in your country, which is geographically far from Iran, but As you may know, radio is a good means to bring us all together, Iran and Guatemala, with other countries, and that's great. Anyway, Osman Adrian Ramos from Guatemala, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. We wish you all the best. And please accept our electronic QSL as verification. Thank you. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Muhammad Akram from Pakistan has sent us a piece of email. Muhammad says, "Dear staff at IRIB English Radio, I hope that you would be fine. And my club friends and I are absolutely fit and fine. I am a new listener of your service. I listen to your programs daily. I found all the programs very informative and interesting. I have a request, and that is you post me a program guide and other items." Salam, Muhammad Akram, and warm greetings to you from Tehran. Thank you very much for sending this email to IRIB English Radio. Also, thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. That's great to hear that you listen to IRIB English Radio programs daily and you find it very informative and interesting. It's good to hear that. So, you're a new listener of IRIB English Radio, and we welcome you to the world of IRIB English Radio, which opens a new window to the world developments and Iran. So, please accept our electronic QSL as verification, since sending any item, any material in the time of pandemic is not possible. So for the time being, please accept our EQSL as verification. And to find the program guide, you can refer to our website at parstoday.ir/en, and there you can find our program schedule and frequencies and program guide. Anyway, Muhammad Akram from Pakistan, send our greetings to your club friends, write to us soon, and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. So here we go to another email from Dario Gabrielli from Italy. Dario Gabrielli is one of our old and regular listeners who says, "Dear friends of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, with great pleasure, I received your reply. I am very happy that you received my reception report sent some time ago via email. I want to inform you that every week I listen to the broadcast in English because I don't like listening to internet radio. I wish you a good continuation from the northeast of Italy." Salam and warm greetings to you, Dario Gabrielli from Italy, and thank you very much for this email. Please accept our electronic QSL as verification, and it's good to hear that you're interested in listening to shortwave radio. And that's the way almost everyone likes, I mean, listening to the traditional kind of radio. That's good, Dario Gabrielli from Italy. Thank you very much for this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. welcome back. From Greece, we've received an email from Nektarios Manousos, one of our regular listeners. Nektarios says, "Dear friends, I would like to report a reception of your medium waves broadcast. If my reception report of your program was correct, I hope that you will send me your QSL verification card or your eQSL, which we'll do too. In case that you will need more program details for the verification, please let me know so I can get back to you in the future. Also, you can find a few technical details of my reception, which I hope it will be useful to your staff. It was really fun listening to your broadcast. I learned things for sure. That's the magic of the radio, and I definitely would like to hear you again in the future." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Nektarios Manousos from Greece, and please accept our warm appreciations to you for this great email. It was detailed and good. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. So please accept our electronic QSL as verification. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Nektarios Manousos from Greece. So here we come to the end of this edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us. But before saying goodbye, I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our great listeners who have sent us reception reports and emails from around the world, including Protama Prom from Bangladesh, Osman Ramos Reyes from Guatemala, Bashir Ahmed from India, Ding Lu from China, also Dario Gabrielli from Italy, Muhammad Akram from Pakistan, and Nektarios Manousos from Greece. It was good to be with you. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and your favorite program, Listeners Special. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
It was reported as a positive trip by the IAEA chief Rafael Grossi to Iran's capital, Tehran. Grossi hailed relations between Iran and the IAEA as positive after meeting with Iran's atomic chief Islami and Iran's president Ebrahim Raisi. But underlying this trip, IAEA inspectors had reported Iran had enriched uranium close to 84%, which Iran had to then clarify. Why are there such reports which then require Iran to have to defend its stance? And why did Grossi, when asked whether the IAEA is a political tool at the hands of a few, would deny this to be the case? Just a couple of the angles we'll be looking at in this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guest. Farshid Baghdadian is a political analyst who joins us from Karaj. Also joining us is Don DeBar, who's an activist and commentator, joining us from Austin in New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome. Farshid Baghdadian, first over to you. We're looking at what was this trip that took 2 days in duration, of which it was, I don't want to use the word hailed, but it was widely reported to be very positive in terms of the cooperation, and some even called an agreement between the IAEA and Iran. But why should this be such a positive thing when you take a look at all the different hardships that Iran has endured based on giving itself that cooperation spirit and then not getting what it should have gotten in return?
Thank you very much. I believe that the International Atomic Agency took the Iranian cooperation as a granted, because Iran, during this talk and deal with Iran for the nuclear talks from 2015 till now, during this time, always Iranian did their duty, but the Western Europe, the Western powers, especially the United States, they didn't act as a friendly act to us. So I just see in some days before, Mr. Putin announced that he withdraw from the START 1 nuclear agreement with the United States. This is what the main reason of the trip of Mr. Grossi to Tehran, because the escalation of the nuclear hazard and nuclear war all around the world, it make them to think about again for Iran, because the particle they found as 84% of enrichment is what merely was the particle, not the activity. And right now the report should be friendly, as they had a common briefing, press briefing, I think, and they told that the enrichment was 60%, and this is acceptable for us. It was acceptable before this trip, and right now, they need some guarantee from Iran for not enrich anymore, or maybe help Russia, because Russia is merging for a new attack on the spring to the Ukraine, and the escalation of the nuclear hazard, maybe the spread over all around the world. This is the fact that they are approaching more friendly to Iran this time. This is the fact, not anything else, because Mr. Ned Price and Mr. Blinken speeches regarding and the their opinion was not friendly. And they told that we are waiting for the report from the Mr. Grossi. And Mr. Grossi is not the decision maker for the West, and just not bringing any, he's not bringing any message from West to us. Just Mr. Gerasi is take them that Iran did his duty and Iran is giving the guarantee to not support any nuclear, nuclear hazard for the spread over the world. That is the fact that okay. Mr. Gerasi was here. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, Don DeBar, I guess they're talked about 60% enrichment. I mean, I have so many questions to ask, but just on that particular note there, there was a press conference that Grossi had in Vienna just about an hour ago. And this is really interesting. He says on the 60%, the Iranians, don't need to tell us why they reached 60%. What's important, we have the necessary ability to inspect. Isn't that kind of an odd statement to come from the IAEA chief, Rafael Grossi?
It is an odd statement if you expect essentially that these, that the architecture of international relations is, an architecture of honest brokerage. But of course, it's not. It's in the real world. The United States and the Soviet Union were the principal engines of the IAEA. Eisenhower is credited with, being his brainchild in 1957, but the United States didn't ratify the treaty and put it into effect as against the U.S. until 1967. The organization is centered in Vienna. You know, that's the heart of NATO, basically. And it has been, like the other instruments of international architecture based in Western Europe, an instrument of colonial control of much of the rest of the world. Look at the International Court of Justice and the other, the Hague judicial structures in general, which for some reason seem to prefer to indict African leaders over any other, potential defendants. The objective picture, going on right now is the United States is attempting to isolate each of its enemies between Russia, China, Iran in particular, and also South Africa and others that are beginning to see perhaps the objective requirement of some sort of military cooperation in the face of, an assault from the U.S. and NATO against all of them at once. There are the claims that Iran is sending drones and setting up manufacturing facilities for drones in Russia. There's the claim that China is considering manufacturing weapons for Russia, threats from the United States and all of that. This is the context in which Grossi holds his press conference. Remarkable, actually, is the fact that he didn't claim to find a nuclear suitcase when he was in Tehran and seek to have the U.S. invade and get rid of the weapons of mass destruction, because that is the pressure certainly coming from Washington at the moment.
Farshid Balkhanian, taking a look at what question was asked by our Press TV correspondent to Rafael Grossi on the fact that whether the IAEA has been politicized in terms of the way information is given out or that it's being used as a political tool, and in terms of just overall vis-a-vis Iran, how it's given out ambiguous statements. The response by Grossi was, I think any military attack on a nuclear facility is outlaw, is out of the normative structures that we will all abide by. And he wouldn't even acknowledge that Iran's nuclear facility was actually attacked by Israel on more than one occasion. I mean, this is Rafael Grossi of the past. I'm not too sure what type of transformation he's gone through from then since now when it comes to Israel. Of course, we need to also mention that he went to Israel before there was a resolution leveled against Iran through the Board of Governors in the past. Why is he playing that posturing when asked that question?
I believe that, first of all, thank to our friend, fully agree with what he said. The fact is, Iran is right now, we have an expression in political science that means that sitting on the fence. Iran right now is sitting on the fence, and Iran can be declined to the right or the left. And that is the fact. Right now, they are. It's terrifying the world. I mean, the nuclear talk is right now, they're terrifying the world. Because we can decline to the third, World War III, maybe we can decline to the position that may push the world to the peace talk. This is the fact that right now, as you see, one or two days before it was a news that in the media that Russia is trying to reach to the Persian Gulf or the Oman Sea, and they can consider that Russia is spreading its power to the whole region. Regarding the Israel, and holding this point right now, regarding the Israel, Israel has a very vulnerable size, and Israel is not a powerful. Despite of Iron Dome, and Israel is not a safe place for the Israeli people. And any conflict with Iran through drones, through missiles, or any kind of the war machine, it would be very hazardous for the region, especially for the Israeli regime. So right now, they are trying to push Iran down from the fence to the exact point or exact site that they want right now. And I want to repeat that Mr. Garusi is not the policymaker guy or the player. Just he sent his report, and remember that after the September 11th, then they attacked Iraq, and they after that, because they found some facilities and some site that they are producing chemical and biological and maybe a nuclear weapon, and after that they said that the FBI report was false. Mm-hmm. Right now, Iran is not giving them any permission to give the false report. And this is the fact that Mr. Garusi was here in Iran.
All right. Don DeBar, as this news is spreading, because it's very fresh off the press, especially given this press conference that Rafael Grossi had in Vienna, a very simple question that comes out of this is, why should Iran trust, I'm not going to say the agency, but the other actors, in particular the U.S., when it comes to anything that has to deal with Iran's civilian nuclear file? I mean, why should there be optimism here, which Grossi is sending this message of optimism? Put that into context for us, if you can.
Yeah, there's a number of ways to do that. Very first is there is already an agreement that was negotiated over a period of years with an awful lot of pressure from the United States, an awful lot of determination from Iran to protect its sovereignty, a participation of many others. Agreement was signed, executed, implemented, except for the part where Iran was supposed to get sanctions relief. That never really happened. Trump gets elected. He was campaigning against the agreement, and he abrogated what little participation the U.S. had done up to that point. And Biden ran against that, saying that Trump, was making trouble where there was no need for trouble and that he shouldn't have withdrawn from the agreement. And now we're 2 years into Biden's administration, and we still are here playing this game instead of starting, where we were at on January 20th, 2017. That's the aspect with respect to the U.S. In 2014 and 2015, the United States, some 50 years after, almost 50 years after the execution of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which calls for the sunsetting of all nuclear weapons within a reasonable period of time, announces, in fact, it's going to spend $1 trillion to renew its nuclear arsenal. And I know that Mr. Grossi was not the head of the IAEA at the time, but I don't see any statement right now demanding that the United States cease and desist from that. Finally, in the context of the war in Ukraine, the nuclear doctrine of Russia was spelled out very simply, which is, number one, we will only use nuclear weapons if we are attacked with nuclear weapons or if the very survival of our state is threatened. And the U.S. response to that was to announce that they intended to take down the Russian state. If I were the head of the IAEA, I would then condemn the United States, first of all, for making this statement, and then tell them you have to do everything to back out of this condition so you don't provoke a nuclear war. And I don't see any of that happening. I see them nickel and diming Iran, impugning its integrity and sovereignty, and frankly, shilling for Israel.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, so since both have mentioned Ukraine in this context in terms of Iran, Farshid Bagharian, are we looking at the fact that instead of anybody pinning their hopes on something coming out of all the positive, from what appears to be positive news coming from Grossi, that this is just so Grossi, through the IAEA, which is one of the UN's organization, which the U.S. provides at least almost a quarter of its budget, that they just want to have some kind of watch over Iran's civilian nuclear program, but they're not going to give any type of room for Iran because they believe that Iran, which Iran has denied, is providing Russia with these, for example, drones.
I believe that the watchdogs group prior to the trip of Mr. Garusi was in Iran, and they inspected everything. And so he was, how can I explain? It was a political show only, merely, and nothing else. But the friendly and positively report has not make sense for Iran, first of all, because we are facing another decision making. For example, right now the Congress and the Senate of the United States is not giving power to the Mr. Biden administration, Mr. Biden himself, for example, to sign any new agreement with Iran, and they have to pass it because the legitimacy of this the agreement would be passed from the Congress, and they're very blockage and obstacle for Iran, for any new agreement for Iran. But I'm going to repeat again that the fact is we are approaching a new world war, maybe hazard, because Mr. Gerasimov is right now is the head of the operation of the new spring attack to Ukraine. And the Gerasimov doctrine itself contains the using of the nuclear power. And that is the fact that the world is right now is being terrified, and in this position they want to make Iran silence, to not cooperate with Russia as a strategic
Well, when you say this cooperation, that's a good point. We're kind of straying a little bit away from the subject here, but Don DeBar, this cooperation between Iran and Russia is alarming the White House, and it is definitely alarming Israel. Our guest there says perhaps that they, the U.S. and Israel, are looking at this from the top down in terms of them wanting to do things that would restrict this relationship, maybe. But maybe it's the other way around. Maybe they are noticing that this, to them, spells danger for whatever reasons they think that it would, and that they need to somewhat play catch-up in a sense. And so, therefore, they need to make sure that things get done. And Iran's civilian nuclear program is one way to at least have some kind of footing inside the Islamic Republic.
Yeah. It's leverage. That's exactly what it is. Look, you know, they do sanctions for the same reason. The purpose of sanctions, for example, and I'll point out that both Iran and Russia are the subject of massive sanctions from the U.S. and the EU. The purpose of that is to immiserate the population in the countries in the hope that it will create political unrest and the government will fall or be compromised or in a position where it will negotiate from a position of weakness. And the negotiations are high-pressure negotiations. In essence, for concessions to the Western corporations, in the case both of Russia and Iran, primarily of petrochemicals, petroleum, oil, et cetera, at prices favorable to the West, including ownership, which they're not shy about claiming. So the United States, which has dropped $100 billion worth of weaponry and other material aid for a war that's about 13 months old now, active shooting war in Ukraine, is telling Russia and Iran and China that they cannot, of course, have any sort of military aid from one to the other in the face of a major military threat and some 400 military bases facing those three countries, under conditions of sanction, under conditions of continuous military provocation, as you pointed out, under conditions where the nuclear facilities are attacked militarily by the U.S. agent in the area, Israel. And so, you know, there is some pushback, but unfortunately for Russia and Iran and China, their sanity prevents them from responding in kind, because this escalates into a global war that serves no one's purposes. But the IAEA should be sitting in, I was going to say Jerusalem, but really Tel Aviv, the capital of the so-called State of Israel, and asking about the 300-plus warheads that exist there illegally. And, you know, the fact that they may or may not, Israel's state may or may not be a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty means nothing. Because if Iran withdrew from the treaty today, it certainly wouldn't mitigate what the U.S. would want to do to Iran under a claim that it has some sort of nuclear weapons. And no one's claiming Iran has anything near the capacity to produce an arsenal like the one that Israel has installed. And it's Iran that's the subject of sanctions, and the subject of this, and not Israel.
That's a great point, Farshid Bagheriyan. When you take a look at the different threats that have come, even as recent as just days ago, practically, when you had a top U.S. Defense Department official say that Iran could make enough material for one nuclear bomb in 12 days. You had the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which has time and again, for practically more than a decade, maybe even longer, make those claims against Iran. Yet you have the nuclear, the U.S. Nuclear Posture Review in 2022 saying there is no evidence that the Iranian government is pursuing a nuclear weapon. Quote, Iran does not today possess a nuclear weapon, and we currently believe it is not pursuing one. That's the Pentagon's authoritative report. You have somebody from the Pentagon saying Iran is going to develop one in 12 days, but the Pentagon report says no, it does not possess a nuclear weapon, and it's not pursuing one. What do you make of the threats that Farshid Bagheriyan?
Israeli regime is right, is nowadays is suffering from the turmoil, domestic turmoil, and I think that Mr. Netanyahu cannot get rid of this turmoil right now. And they are some kind of credit. They are making a credit for the, foreign policy to put it in the domestic policy. And Mr. We cannot base, making any there doesn't make sense. The talk with Mr. Netanyahu and all he said about because the line that the Pentagon is said, or maybe the authorities of the United States say that they indeed make in 12 days Iran can make the nuclear a weapon, is the all the words that they are using is derived from the Mr. Netanyahu administration. But the fact is Iran, after 84% enrichment, they found some particles right now. They get it down to 60%. And what happened to 12 days? And if you make a calculation, 12 days is right now make to, maybe set back to 12 months. Iran is not making any nuclear weapon. And they know this. This is the ideological context, and this is they know it very well, but they are I'm trying to repeat my sentence that they have fear regarding the strategic ties with Russia, and they have fear that maybe Russia can bring some warhead from his